Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. My name is Paul Harvey, and I'm looking for answers. What does it mean to be successful? What does it mean to have a good, well-lived life? This podcast is conversations with people that look like they have it sorted. My guest today is Russell Dalgleish. He's a serial Scottish entrepreneur and investor. He's known as a strategist and innovator. In reality, he's a technician and a project manager. He looks at the world through that lens, using those principles to run his life very successfully. He's an advisor to business and governments and is often called upon by the media to comment on business issues. From the beginning, Russell developed an interest in technology, and it has allowed the development of a successful international career in the technology sector. He focuses his efforts on supporting owners and the boards of small to medium-sized companies to devise and implement growth strategies and create and increase shareholder value. His range of business accomplishments is extensive. If there is a list of business influencers, then Russell will be in the top 100 or just outside of it. If you want to read his full biography, please check the podcast website, as there is just too much to list in this introduction. My interest in Russell is what drives him. He is fiercely competitive and has been on my podcast radar for a while. I was delighted that he trusted me enough to say yes and to do the interview. During our conversation, we explore my usual questions, and in return, he put me on the spot. He has a view on success and the meaning of life. He also has a formula and gives suggestions as to how you might discover your own. As ever, I hope you enjoy the conversation enough to share it. So welcome Russell. Thank you for taking the time out this Saturday morning to spend some time with us.
Thank you for inviting.
So this is Life, Passion and Business. And I reached a certain stage in my life where I found I had more questions about life and about business and about things than I had answers. And so I was thinking about how to answer those questions. And I noticed from the people I saw around in social media that some people seemed to have those answers. They seemed to make their life work despite all these questions I had. And I thought, well, let's reach out and ask them. And you were the one of the people that came up on my feed and thought, Russell seems to know what he's doing. So I thought I'd ask you some questions. So tell me, Russell, how did you get to where you are now?
So I was born about 30 miles south of Edinburgh in a small border town. My family's traditionally lived there for the last 400 years. So we didn't really travel far, but I had a great desire to travel. So I left there, went to university in Edinburgh. It was the early 80s, so technology was quite exciting. So I did a degree in application of technology and then went to work for a bank. So I spent 5 years working for a bank in their software development department. We were all called computer programmers then, of course. And it all went very swimmingly well. And then one day I was asked whether I wanted to specialize as a software developer and technician or specialize as a banker and sit banking exams. And I went home that night and decided I didn't really want to do either of those. So I went in the next morning and resigned. I then started to work out, I suppose I built a career trying to answer the question, what is it I really want to do? So I went to work in sales and in marketing and electronics and in, always sort of in technology. And I slowly went from, you know, visiting cities in Scotland, visiting London, visiting England, cities in Europe, and then finally ending up spending half my time on the US West Coast and half my time in Japan and Taiwan. And it kind of gave me a great understanding of how much I enjoyed international work. We started a technology company in Edinburgh in the recruitment space in the late 90s, which was a great opportunity to understand about leadership and about entrepreneurship. And we built that company up to 60 people. We did global contracts like of IBM and Philip Morris, which gave an insight into these large corporations and the challenges they face. And I then got into advisory and consultancy work, where I would spend a lot of time in turnarounds, going in, saving or sinking a company. The last one of those we exited to Detroit investors in 2009. And then since 2011, I've acted as, I run my own advisory business, Exalta Cap Partners, out of London. I also act as an angel investor and coach to a number of businesses. And I co-founded Scottish Business Network, which is the largest network in the world, bringing together Scots in business.
Wow. That's been an interesting career journey. Did you plan that journey?
I don't really plan any further than today. I'm a great believer in the universe or God, or there's a path or something, and all we've got to do is to adhere to our own moral compass, if you like, and the opportunities will be there. But of course, an awful lot of it comes with experience and reputation. And I think experience is something quite incredible because it allows us to just naturally know what to do. So, for example, I get asked to take part in podcasts quite a lot, but this is the one I agreed to do because my experience told me that the type of engagement I was having with you was that this would be a pleasurable experience with you, and I had confidence that you would use the material appropriately. It required me to take a risk, which is what I like doing, a calculated risk. And it required me to trust someone. So I felt from our engagement I could trust you.
Thank you. Thank you. And we have tried to make this podcast work for a while. So we've had kind of backwards and forwards over this because we've had technology issues and time issues and all sorts of things and scheduling issues. So it's been interesting to actually explore that. And it's interesting because it's also because we've connected more, of course, our social media profiles have shown each other more. So we both see more of each other's feeds, which is quite interesting as well. It's kind of the way that social media works. It is interesting that thing about just taking one step at a time. I mean, that's something that I think Oprah Winfrey talks about that. She says, just do the first thing in front of you. Just do the thing in front of you.
It's a way of managing stress as well, because a lot of the time, when I'm working with leaders, what they'll be telling me is that we're going to go into this particular market, so we're going to do this, then we're going to do that. But not in terms of it being a project plan, but in terms of it being steps that they've mapped out in their mind, almost like the screenplay of a film. And what I have to do is to keep on bringing them back to, so what's the first step? Just not all the bits further down the line, because unless we get the first step right, the next step won't happen. So it's all about that next step. And it also means that you can run multiple projects or be involved in multiple businesses, because all I have to worry about is the next step with each one.
Yes. I notice you're very much involved in technology. Do you have a deep understanding of all the things that you are involved in?
My career was kind of, my interest in technology came in 1977. My father, once every 2 weeks, would drive us in an old Volkswagen Beetle from the Scottish border to Edinburgh, which at the time took an hour and a half. So we would get into my brother and I would pull into this Beetle. My father would smoke a pipe the entire journey, so we would stop a couple of times to be sick, and we'd eventually end up in Edinburgh in a huge cinema, a cinema sitting 1,000 people in the cinema, and we'd go there and we'd see these films. And then one day he took us in to see a film, and we were sitting down, and it was Star Wars. And this was an experience. No, I come from a generation where we had 2 TV channels. So it was seeing the application of technology, you know, things that had been imagined to exist. And that kind of spurred a sort of an interest in technology, if you like. But I didn't agree it was about the application of technology. So more business analysis, project management, rather than at the time computer science evolved a screwdriver. So I think I've got a good understanding of the application of technology in different fields. And in the way that I can sort of see how the world will, to a certain extent, change. So we'll see things like blockchain will be developed and deployed, and it will have a much bigger effect on our society than car automation, if you like.
Then the last bit, I missed the last bit. A lot bigger effect then?
No, if we look at if we think about the application of technology, so we know that our society is going to be changed, that we're going to move from cars driven by people to automatic vehicles. We know that change is going to happen. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of how cars can drive themselves, but I'm fairly sure the technology will be able to do that. And I think people are going to look back and say, you were insane to allow human beings to drive cars. But that technological change is going to have a huge social impact. that the number of people involved whose jobs are either directly dependent through driving the vehicles or are dependent through some form of distribution or something to do with the vehicles, that's going to create an enormous change in our societies around the world, and it's going to lead to a lot of opportunities. So though I can design an automatic vehicle, I can't imagine what the effects are going to be of the change.
Yeah. I mean that example alone will also affect the the catering industry, you know, the roadside cafes that are there for the trucks and things. They're just, you know, you take 20% of the trucks off the road and that's a big chunk of their business.
It is, but what happens with technological change as well is we sort of live in denial. So we'll go, it won't work. You know, if you look at today, Ryanair is the second largest airline in Europe. And yet I can remember traveling on one of the very first Ryanair flights and people just thinking it was a joke. We didn't accept that change. So British Airways or these other big airlines would sit there going, that's never going to work.
Yeah, well, then there's the famous story of Blockbuster, isn't there? Going, oh, these Netflix people, what are they thinking about,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are really clever people running very big companies that can't see something which to many of us would seem obvious.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what is interesting also about the big technology companies. You know, like if you're thinking of like Facebook's woes this week, you know, at some point they must have realized they were stepping on toes. And
I suppose to a certain extent, it's a new thing. So it's a story breaks and someone realizes, hey, we're doing that wrong. We're going to have to fix it and change it. So there's a reaction to that. I think if you went into any company with a torchlight, you could probably see things that they're doing that they shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, well, I've done that. I do that. Okay, I do that anyway. Yes, and exactly. You walk in there, somebody go, maybe that's not a good thing.
We're currently recording this, and we're 4 weeks out from GDPR legislation becoming law.
I know,
and that's really interesting because we're talking to people who are going, but we don't have any data. And then when they start to do the audit and they start to analyse it, they go, hey, you know, we do have stuff that's personal data, and we probably weren't looking after it correctly because we just never thought of that.
Yeah. Well, the GDPR thing is a classic example. You talk to people now, they're saying like even just working on the train now becomes a potential data breach. You're sitting on your desk at the train and someone's looking over your shoulder, looking at your screen.
But if we think about it from the other side, which is my personal data.
Yeah.
So if I gave you my email address so that we could set up this call, that's completely okay. But if you found my email address through some other means and then you're sending me messages, then you're wrong. You shouldn't be doing that. That's theft.
Yeah. And it's just that we didn't notice that when we just walked into that and didn't notice it.
Of course, yeah. So we've because it's been a big change, the last major update to the 1998 and 2005 updates to the Data Protection Act. We haven't really noticed much since then.
I mean, I'm really pleased this is happening now, and certainly the Facebook thing's happening now, because I can see, you know, the technology turning up in our homes in terms of Alexa, but you know, the smart fridge or the smart, you know, the smart bits of kit that turn up. I mean, now at least when those things arrive, the data that they collect, there will be a consciousness about where that data goes. Because prior to this conversation, you know, Alexa could have been reporting about your dinner conversation. The next morning, yes, you're getting adverts about what you discussed at dinner. And, you know, that won't happen now. Or if it does happen, there will be some questions about it.
Of course, and it's probably been happening and we've just not really noticed it, or it's not really been sophisticated enough up till now.
Anyway, look, I'm getting geeked out on the conversation you and I are having, because that's kind of where I go with these things, and it kind of is taking us off what this is really about, is about your journey and your process, and it's really interesting to explore that with you, but I'm going to pull us back onto conversation, I think. So tell me, what is success for you? What do you determine success?
I think a success to me is achieving the objective. So inherently, there has to be a reason for doing something. So success on this particular podcast is not to come across appearing foolish. So the way that I de-risk that is I do a little bit of research beforehand so that we can actually make this conversation work. I ease my accent by speaking slower. You know, so I tried to do things, and it really does come down. I suppose I'm a project manager by training. You know, and it's all about each individual project. What is the definition of success? And that has to be measurable. These have to be smart objectives. I think for the companies I work with, success is the fact that I help them achieve what they and I have agreed as the objective. So I'm very clear that it's measurable in everything I do.
So that is a very clinical definition of success.
Yep.
But is success, you know, classically, we are told, or you know, we are led to believe that success is the car, the house, the possessions. You know, that's what classic success is, or in terms of what, that's one form of success that gets promoted or sold to our young people.
All right, okay. Well, that's not me. I don't own a car.
You don't own a car, did you say?
No, no, I gave up my car a couple of years ago. I live, it's a 15-minute walk to the local train station, which is 20 minutes from any major hub, so Edinburgh in my case, and I'm a 20-minute Uber ride from the airport.
Okay, I can understand that.
So, and if I have to hire a car for a day, if I need to do it, I've never done that. I think success is something that we feel inside, and to a certain extent, we do need external validation of that success. But to me, it's not, you know, it's very difficult because people say, have you been a success or are you wealthy? These are very difficult questions to answer. So I don't own a car, but I did spend 3 weeks on vacation in New Zealand in November. So these are interesting dynamics, if you like, of what's success then. So the money I would have used to have a car, I instead went on holiday. And I think success has to be a personal thing, though, rather than, you know, validation is nice, but it's not that important to me.
Yeah, that's a good sense of it, I think.
It's also interesting when you try to do that as a measure. So I choose to dress in a particular way when I'm in my business world. It's kind of developed over the time. Typically, it's jeans and a shirt and a jacket, no tie. Now, part of the reason for doing that is that I could buy, would be for me, a £400 expensive suit in Edinburgh, which would be fine. But if I wore that suit in London, people would look at me in that suit and go, oh, that's quite a cheap suit. And that would affect their relationship with me. Whereas if I wear jeans and a shirt and a jacket, they've got no idea. And that way that people judge us and take a perception on us is really interesting in the dynamic and like in the sales process for me.
Yes, there is that thing about success. It's like there's personal success and then there's the outward view of success, as you say. And I agree with you, the suit thing is definitely part of that. And I break that mold. I never wear a suit, but I'm not even sure I own one anymore.
Yeah. Well, I did. Well, see, that it's not never. So I spent the weekend in a suit because I was running a training course for business leaders in Dubai. So that was working with people from Syria and Iraq and Iran who are building businesses there. And I chose to wear a suit because it was appropriate for the type of meetings I was in. So I wasn't wearing a suit in an order. I was wearing a suit to conform in the role as the trainer.
Yeah. So are you passionate about what you do?
Yes, absolutely.
How does that manifest in you?
A desire to win. I'm incredibly.
But what does that look like? Because I mean, in terms of some people are passionate in their voice and how they express it. How do you express your passion?
Yes, very, very passionate in voice. And then the way I use the voice, my own voice, and very competitive to win. So I've discovered that to win, one of the tools is to work harder. So I can typically win because I will just simply work harder than someone else who I'm perhaps competing with in order to win. I also like so passion's really quite easy when it's a it's something internal. So because I run this Scottish network, it's very easy to be very passionate about Scotland. So I can share stories of Scottish business success or share stories about the inventiveness or the creativity in Scotland. And then I do that all over the world. So that's very easy. I'm also very passionate when it comes to the companies that I work with. So I work with this amazing company from Newport, Douglas, which is the largest organization in the UK for finding and retrieving lost dogs. I'm incredibly passionate about what they do, but my passion and what I know I have to do for them is I have to help them to raise the money and fund the organization. So I'm very passionate about the route to go to achieve that.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. So are you passionate in your personal life?
I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure how to answer that one.
Okay. I just wonder, because it's like, this is life, passion and business. And my thoughts to see is that how do people, a lot of people get into business and they get into business for one reason, and they find themselves in that business, and then years later, they're still there, but the passion behind it has drained away. And their passion is actually somewhere else in their life. It's in another project or something else.
So the interesting thing for me there is I find it quite difficult to understand why they haven't changed. So I take responsibility for my life and the things that I do. So if I'm working on a project and the project's not right for me, or something happens, then I'll stop the project. But where I'm fortunate is that I work on multiple projects. So that's a number of these projects generate revenue for my business. So if I want to stop one of those projects, it's not the end of the world. It's just one of 30. Whereas as people, as employees, for example, or people as business owners, where that is their sole, as they do the one thing, it's really difficult to make that change. There's also the fear of change. So if I think about companies I was involved in with clients, I may be going into those companies and releasing a number of the staff, because the company can no longer, the company has to make cuts. Now, those individuals at the time may be really quite angry, upset about the fact that they have lost their job. But in time, a number of them will come back and say, hey, that was the best thing that happened, because I had to get out of there and I didn't know how to do it. But I think
There's that lovely quote from, and I'm not sure this, it might be the Microsoft guy, but it also might be the Apple guy, and I can't remember which one of them it is. But he was saying about you can't join the dots looking forward. You can only join the dots looking back.
Oh, right. Okay. That sounds like an economist.
Well, what he meant, I think, was the fact that, you know, you kind of like, you know, You can't project your life forward into where you're going to be, because you don't know where you're going to end up. But when you look back at it and think, wow, you know, that point there, that loss of that job there was an amazing opportunity for me. When you are looking backwards at it.
Yeah, sorry, it was the phrase joining the dots. I think of as a forward thing, whereas we're attempting to create the connection between two disparate points. I think if you speak to any economist, they'll tell you why something happened, but are incapable of telling us what's going to happen in the future. They can give a guide or an idea, but you know, there weren't 20 economists in late 2007 saying, hey, the market's about to crash.
No, indeed.
But looking back, we can sort of see the indicators and understand why things happened.
Well, that's kind of what a lot of people say about investments, is you just like, investments is just a guess.
I think everything is a guess or an assumption. But what we then do is, how do we de-risk it? So if I've made a decision to invest in a company, I've probably taken some time to get to know the people, get to know the market, get to know the company. I will then personally become involved in helping them to build the plan. And then once I invest, it's to try and help them to achieve that plan. So I'm de-risking it all the way. So it's not like horse racing, where I put my money on the jockey on the Grand National and then see what happens. It's the fact that I've actually got involved with the stable to try and understand what optimizes the chance of the horse and the jockey winning. So it's kind of, I think that's the difference. It's becoming involved.
Yes, becoming involved. It's guiding the process, unlike just buying a bunch of shares and hoping for the best.
Yep.
So I also noticed in your feed that you did that, this is a slight shift, but it's a notice that you did that amazing race right across the Scotland from one end down, I think, it down to Fort William. How did that come about? That you know, let's say you're not the youngest gentleman on the block to do that sort of thing. So how did that about?
I have a tendency in my life to say yes to opportunities.
Okay.
So I'd invested or was involved with a company in Glasgow. I now sit on the board, actually, MBN Solutions. It's one of Scotland's top technology recruitment businesses. And the the owner of the company, Michael Young, suggested that we took part in an event. And one of the other directors, Paul Forrest, said, hey, well, let's do it. So I said that I would join in as well. So we first planned to do a half marathon endurance event. And I came home and put on a pair of shorts and discovered that I couldn't run between two lampposts. So I hadn't perceived the fact that I'd become unfit as I'd become older. So what I did was, because we then had a target, we're going to do this event on that date, I then started to train, and I would just run round the lock here, and I'd get fitter and fitter. And I got to a certain level of fitness. This is really important for my business life as well. What I then did was I hired a professional coach, and the professional coach improved me further by changing what I ate, because I didn't think that would have an effect. So I ate 1,800 calories a day for 3 months or something. And the effect there was that I became optimally fit for my age. And we did the event. And then we've been doing tougher and tougher events ever since then. So this year, we're going to compete again in the Coast to Coast Rat Race, which is 118 miles or something from Inverness to Glencoe. And we're going to do it in a single day as opposed to doing it in 2 days, which is what we did last year. And again, it's my competitive nature.
How do you do? Is that run? That's running, cycling, and kayaking, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
At least there's no swimming involved. I could deal with that without the swimming.
But I think for me, it's the beauty of life. So it's a privilege to get the opportunity to take part in things like that and to spend time with friends and get to support and nurture each other as you go through experiences like that. And I suppose that there was a great parallel between that and my business life and my personal life. Mm-hmm. And I've got three sons, and I've run with all of my sons in these types of events. So it's given me as a father a new experience that I wouldn't have had either if I hadn't done those. And I'm fitter and healthier, and I've got more energy now than I probably would have had.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
So the whole thing kind of sits together. And again, it comes back to the spiritual thing that's quite important to my life, which was I said yes to that because I trusted the people who were going to do it. And then I de-risked it by doing as much as I possibly could. Like we went out to vacation in Spain 2 weeks before the big event last year. And I did running and cycling there and kayaking, you know, so I've noticed it more and more that I am a project manager, and I think about these things and sort of manage that risk element.
Yeah, I can hear that's what the sense I'm getting is that you're very, very analytical about how you approach something, and you do the next thing. But it is about project management. I'm really getting the sense of that from you.
It is, and these disciplines are kind of sometimes forgotten. So that's if it's something we're doing is a project, then use project management principles for it. If you want to become an influencer in our world, and by influencer, that could be becoming an influencer to help the companies that I work with, there are key things you probably have to be quite good at. So having a voice is quite important. And that voice might be used as a public speaker, so become good at public speaking. It probably is quite good to be good at social media in some way, so become good at that and understand how these things work.
Yes. And more so than ever, because there are so many platforms, and there's an expectation for us to be out there to achieve that like never before.
But I think it's important to have your own as well. So I haven't outsourced the way I do my social media until recently, because I had to understand it myself. So that was really important, because I've noticed a number of people who outsource their different social media accounts to different companies. And I think they kind of miss the fact that it's really dangerous. I don't really want someone else saying something as me, because it just might not be, that's not my true voice.
True. And I think I'll put my marketing hat on for a moment. And I think as long as the business has established its core story, or the business owner has established their core story and what they're about and what their values are, and those values are well understood by the people speaking for you, then it's possible for someone to emulate you. But it will never be perfect, but it will be very, very close.
But what you've described is a risk that's too big for me to take.
Yes, okay.
So I would calculate that as a risk. So if it was using someone to be the voice of a company and we defined all that, that makes sense.
But yes.
What I notice quite a lot is they just won't ring as true. It all seems, why did you say that? That seems really strange. It's a bit like people who get into arguments on social media. Like, who are you trying to win against? It's just mad.
Yeah, there's no point in having an argument on social media. And I've been there, and I'm kind of going, why am I doing this? It's kind of for some reason you kind of get hooked in. But that's what social media is designed for. It's designed to hook you in and pull you into those things. So, yeah.
Yeah, because someone said some really horrible things about me. So I simply wrote to them and said, hey, why don't we meet? And I never heard from them again.
That's far too challenging for you to meet up with you. So how does a business, someone who is struggling with their passion, struggling with these big questions, how do you think they go about it? I'm guessing I know the answer from you, actually, from what we've said, but what would your advice be to someone?
I would suggest they speak to people. You know, you need to take advice and guidance and get out of your own head. So I get contacted quite often by people who say, you know, they've got a problem or they've got a challenge, or could I help them with this or could I help them with that? And I'm quite happy to give them 5 minutes on the telephone. And I think that's the kind of thing to do, is to try and find the people that you think you might be able to help you and get engaged in a conversation with them. Then have a look at the different pieces of advice you give and then take a decisive action. So the action may be to, for example, to bring in a business coach to look at your business, or a personal development coach to have a look at you, and then start working this through. So the number one thing is to address it.
Mm-hmm.
So don't, if you're unhappy in life or business, I would suggest try and do something about it.
Yes. And that is run your life rather than allow it to run you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Our job as business people is to create companies, not to be part of the company. So if we look at the successes, it's all about that. So, I build models and build organizations, but these organizations should work quite fine without me, because I'm an entrepreneur. Once you've got a business up and running, you don't really want me involved in it, because I'll keep on changing it. You know, I should be working on the IT side, I should be working on the sales side, but the business itself. Once we've got the process, the procedures and the people in place, and everyone's got a clear vision and mission and they know what they're doing, then that should work without my direct involvement.
I always chuckle about that clients can say to me, like, oh, Google's changed this and they've changed that and they've changed this. And they kind of go, well, yeah, but they do employ the biggest brains on the planet. And when you have a room full of the big brains, they have to change things because that's what they're there for.
Right. So that's a really important point. So there's a philosophy about acceptance. So, and it comes from accepting the things you cannot change. So if, for example, Google changes something which stops me from doing something I could do before, then I might grump about it for 5 seconds. But now what I'm looking for is, what is the advantage to me from this change? Because everyone else who I'm competing with is going to take a certain amount of time to react to this change, so I'm going to react first. And if we look at other changes in our society, such as Brexit, so if we assume Brexit is going to go ahead in the way it's planned, let's start thinking about what the opportunity is. If it's Scottish independence, which is always, if that does happen or doesn't happen, which was the vote a couple of years ago, it's like, what would the upside be? And the Scottish independence vote was really interesting for me, because what it did was it put Scotland, to a small extent, on an international map. I was in Los Angeles at the time of the vote, and people were asking me, why were Scottish people trying to sack the Queen? So that was the way it was being interpreted. But what was important was, for the first time ever, people in Los Angeles knew where Scotland was. And then the coverage of the outcome of the vote was really interesting, because in the States, it wasn't covered, in where I read it, it wasn't covered as win, lose, and what does that mean? Because that's something that matters to the people of Scotland, not the people in the rest of the world. What was interesting that the Americans covered it as being, this was one of the clearest signs of the democratic process working with no violence that had ever been seen in the world. You know, an almost 90% turnout at a democratic election. The people all voted, made their decision, and the decision was then honoured. And that was really interesting. You know, now we've seen democracy introduced into countries since the Second World War in quite a number of different ways. But this was an exhibition of something happening. And it also was interesting because it fitted in with a sort of an appreciation people had of what Scottish people were probably like. So the perception around the world when I've done these surveys has been that people look on Scots as being trustworthy and hardworking, kind of clever, you know, and it just sort of came across like that. So it's interesting. So rather than rather than complaining when it goes wrong, is to look what the upside is. What could the opportunity be when Google changes something?
Yeah. That's a lovely perspective on the independence vote, which I'd never really anticipated. And I guess I wouldn't have noticed it because I was here at the time, whereas you in a different part of the world had a completely different view of it. And I think that's really interesting.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
So we touched on something earlier, very slightly. You said you have a slight spiritual kind of look at something.
Yeah,
could you say more about that? And I'm not going to challenge you on it. If you don't want to go there, it's up to you. But I was interested that you said it.
Yeah, I have a very strong personal spiritual belief in the way that I lead my life. And that allows me to have a great confidence in what I do. So I have an inherent ability to know when I'm doing something right or wrong. And it helps me, guides me when I'm trying to make decisions on things. But it's very much a personal thing. So it's from material I've read or what I've studied or what I've done. I've ended up with this own personal belief set.
So is that a sort of a feeling in your gut? Is that a sense? How does that manifest for you?
I suppose it's intrinsically having a very strong belief in I'm doing something for the right reason. So if I'm about to do something that could well be wrong, I'll tend to get that feeling in my gut, in my soul, whatever it is. Yeah. And a lot of it is because it's quite difficult for people in my position, because you tend to have used your ego very much to drive yourself to get to the position you're in, but then overusing the ego can then destroy it. So, and it's quite interesting. A friend of mine said that to me. That was too much Russell going on at the moment, and that I have to pull back. It's interesting.
I would like to see you in a place with too much Russell going on. I think I'm going to have to come and see one of your speeches and see what it looks like. So is there anything that I haven't said or no other, sorry I, is there anything I haven't asked you that you think is relevant that you'd like to say that I should have asked you?
So you'll have an understanding of the people that listen to your podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So what is your market like? What's your customer like? What is the profile of that customer?
My sense of those people is they're very much like me. They're very much people in their later years, possibly in business, in a small business, possibly in a large business. And they are, I guess what it was, I came to that conclusion is that there must be more to this life than eating, drinking, making love, having families and making money. And that's where I came to. Well, I thought myself, well, if I've got those feelings going on, because I'm now in my 50s, I'm sure other people have too. And so that's the group of people that we're talking to.
Okay. So if I was thinking about that as a customer profile and thinking about, you know, if the people listening to this talk at the present moment have got that belief set, then I would encourage them to do things they haven't done before. I would encourage them to spend some time understanding who they are and what they are. So I spent quite a lot of time doing different ways to try and get an understanding of who I really am. What are my strengths and what are my weaknesses? What is it I absolutely love doing? You know, what is it that, so if I think about what do I really love doing? I really love being Scottish and I really love international travel. So I like being in Deira in Dubai last week. I love that. And I love that engagement with people from different countries and different cultures. So because I know that that's inherently something I do and something I love, I then look at the different aspects of my life and think, how can I change those so I can do the things I love? So when it comes to holidays, my wife and I take a number of additional weeks holiday each year. And we do that. And I know inside me, it's so that the key drivers spend time together. But I know that I like traveling and I like meeting people from different cultures. So 2 years ago, we drove across America. Last year, we drove across New Zealand. So that I knew that those were things that were inherently I would enjoy doing anyway. And then when it comes to my business life, if I know that those are my gut inner beliefs, then when someone asks me to work with them to create Scottish Business Network, a network of Scottish people all over the world, which involves me traveling to different countries, talking about Scotland and meeting with Scots, then that's probably going to fit my you know, my inner desire as well and fit it very well. And then what you do is, so once you've done that, you then look for the opportunities that come on top of that. So what are the business opportunities? What are the personal experience opportunities that can come from doing those things? So understand yourself and make that the purpose. Because once you've got an insight, even a slight insight into what you really love doing, then start changing your life so that you're spending more time doing that. So for me, it's the being with my family. It's the doing the international travel and the meeting the different cultures and being all the time being Scottish.
That's very. It sounds very like the Simon Sinek approach, which is like, you know, begin with why. You know, and I always begin with why, and I love that, and I'm still exploring my why. And one of the things I know that I love doing and really enjoy doing is this. I know that, you know, we've been talking for 42 minutes, and it doesn't feel like anything like 42 minutes has passed.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one thing I know I enjoy doing is speaking.
So the problem I've got, though, the inherent challenge I have in my personality is that I'm enjoying this experience, and I could imagine that I would listen to a number of your podcasts as your business grows, but then I would be looking on, well, how do you turn this into something bigger? How do you turn it into something bigger? And where are you going to hold the national conference about where you've got these speakers on stage doing it for real? And where's the TV going to channel? No, so that's the problem I've got, is that I look on these things as being business opportunities, and how can you scale it?
I can tell you if you want to know.
Okay.
So I'll tell you what happened. I had a podcast guest, Lisa Avery, who is a positive psychologist. And we had a program, and it was an interesting program. And we've had several conversations since, and we are slowly building up a project that will be life, passion, and business. And it's purely the process will be about helping business owners who are in this position find more out about themselves and bring their passion and bring that energy that has been lost back into their life and back into their business.
Well, if you want to help with that, I'd be delighted to help. But start with the why, though. So do the, you know, like the Gallup strengths test or something. You know, do something like that so that you really understand who you really are.
Yes, yes. That's what we're both doing at the moment there to work it forward.
Is that?
So this is a final question for you, and I ask it of everybody, and you've probably answered it, but I will ask it again just so that you can actually put it into some sort of context. For you, what is the meaning of life?
It's just going to sound a bit cryptic. So the purpose of life is to find the meaning. So I don't know the answer yet because I'm still researching.
It's actually very good, actually. It's a good answer. Because I've read somewhere that part of the meaning of life is kind of, you know, life is just life. How you live it is the meaning.
Could be. I think the other part, though, is helping others.
Yeah.
So I've tried to help others in various different ways. And I started a charity and stuff like that and did things like that. And, you know, like, I was just rubbish at it. So I've discovered that the only thing I'm really very good at is business. So if I can help people grow their business, that's what I'll do. Or resolve, if I can help people resolve the problem they've got with their business, that's what I'll do.
It sounds to me like you apply your project management skills everywhere and that works for you everywhere.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Love working in sectors I haven't worked in before or cultures I haven't worked with.
Yeah. Yeah, it does sound like that. So I think we've covered it all. I think I've had a really enjoyable journey talking to you. And I'd like to thank you for taking the time again for being with me today. So
thank you very much.
If people want to connect with you, what's the best process? How can they do that?
The simplest way is to send me a message. So I'm on, you just type my name into like Google and it comes up. But LinkedIn's probably LinkedIn or Twitter are probably the key social media channels I do. And then I promote whenever I'm speaking anywhere and when I'm traveling. And I'm always delighted to meet new people.
Great. Thank you very much. So thank you, Russell. And
no problem. Thank you.
I hope we get to speak again sometime.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Russell Dalgleish. You can find the contact details for Russell at the podcast website, lifepassionandbusiness.com. As I've said it before, but if you enjoyed this program or found something useful in it, please share it with your friends. use your social media channels, subscribe through your podcast app, or just leave a review somewhere. Finally, if you have any questions, please get in touch. You can find me on the website or a LinkedIn. It only remains me to say thanks for listening, and I hope to catch you later.